Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll recap the week one opener between the Giants and the Cowboys. Dallas beats the Giants 19-3. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Certainly plenty to cover over the next 60 minutes. And let's start with the offensive issues that really plagued this team from top to bottom. The fact that at one
really
point.
Do you really want to?
Well, we have to. The facts are the facts, and you can't necessarily get around that. Giants only settling for 3 points. They were able to move the football at times in the second half, but, I mean, that didn't necessarily lead to production, and that's the key. You can move the football, you gain yardage, but if it's not translating to points, it doesn't really help you in the long run. But in terms of the first half, Paul, I mean, you had multiple issues. You had issues in terms of the inability to move the football down the field without Odell Beckham there. You had issues in terms of running the football, which was something we saw last season, and pass protection. Eli Manning was pressured an awful lot throughout the course of this game, and that impacted not just his ability to dump off the short passes, but his ability to look down the field and try to open things up.
Yeah, it was a major problem. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. And I thought the starting offensive line was disappointing in the first two preseason games. I thought they played well against the Jets. Then they did not play in game four. And so they hadn't been in a game in 2 weeks. You know, I don't know. Do you want to say they just simply took a step back? Do you want to say that maybe that's what they are? Do you want to say that maybe they were rusty and maybe it's time for a lot of coaches to start reexamining, you know, what should you do in that fourth preseason game? Is it not a great idea for an offensive line that needs continuity above all else? Because remember, the sum is greater than the individual parts in the offensive line and also in the secondary. Those are the two positions on the football team where the group is more important than the individual guys. Is it? I mean, there was a lot of sloppy football yesterday and some horrific offensive line play across the league. So four Giants fans get to the phones and go absolutely ballistic and want to throw all kinds of darts and flames at us and at the offensive line. Let me make something very clear, folks. If you watched or read anything about the NFL yesterday, it was sloppy, and it was a bad day for offensive lines virtually across the league. So, I don't know. Is this whole resting guys in the fourth preseason game, especially the offensive line, is that a contributor? I ask. I don't know. But could it be?
Well, I think you could say the same thing about, is it a contributor to the injuries that we also saw in week one, Paul, when a lot of the starters are not playing in the preseason, and then they get out there for the first time in week one, not taking as many hits throughout the course of the preseason. Does that contribute to maybe the high rate of injuries that we saw,
you
too?
You know, and I have felt that for a number of years, and then the owners and the players decided, let's go all the way down to 53 in the final cut after that fourth preseason game so that we can encourage our coaches to play all the backup guys so that we don't have to suffer injuries to our regular guys. But again, we have to really examine what's counterproductive here, because I firmly believe, and I can't stress this enough, because many former players have said the same thing to me. If you are not physically and mentally prepared for game one of the regular season, your risk of injury increases dramatically. And somebody needs to take a good hard look at what's going on with training camp and then the corollary to the preseason and how we're playing players, because it's not working real well right now.
I think you made an interesting point about offensive line play in week one across the board. The Steelers had 7 sacks against a completely revamped Cleveland Browns offensive line. Cleveland went out and brought in all new faces. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh manhandled that Cleveland offensive line. Jacksonville had 10 sacks against the Houston Texans offensive line. Now, granted, the Texans were missing their starting left tackle because he's still holding out because of a contractual issue, but they've made some draft picks. You know, they had a headache. And then the Redskins which have a bunch of veterans, Brandon Scherff, who's a Pro Bowl player, they gave up 4 sacks to the Philadelphia Eagles.
And I got to see a lot of that game when I was in Dallas yesterday afternoon. I did not scout the Lions game, so let me just answer your questions right now. I haven't looked at a single shred of Lions tape. I know they lost to...
No, they came back and beat the Arizona Cardinals.
They came back and beat the
Cardinals. Yeah, they had a fourth-quarter rally.
I did not even want to see, there you go. I didn't watch a shred of that. I actually spent a lot of time watching the Philly game yesterday before heading over to the stadium in Dallas. It was a jailbreak virtually every play. I mean, it was really, really, really bad. And the Redskins are supposed to have an upper half offensive lineman, if not better, than most teams in the league. And it was a jailbreak. I mean, the Eagles' pass rush,
which is good, by the way.
Has been.
Yeah.
I thought they might take a drop this year. Didn't show it yesterday.
Well, they didn't lose many personnel, and they added Derek Barnett in the first round. So, if anything, I think Philadelphia improved.
Maybe they did. But I'll tell you what, yesterday they got after it.
They certainly did. I mean, Fletcher Cox returned the fumble for a touchdown, and they got Kirk Cousins in very precarious situations.
I mean, that very dangerous Redskins offensive attack, and they have weapons. And we've talked about this too, Lance. Until yesterday, and I don't know if I should waver, I thought that their offense could make them a threat for the division.
And I don't think that you should remove that tape after one game.
I'm not going to be a knee-jerk guy, but certainly it gives you a pause.
It should, just like with what happened to the Giants yesterday. I mean, it has to give you a pause, and it's more than a pause, mainly because of trends, Paul. And the things that we talked about last season carrying over into 2017 with some new personnel on offense, I think brings a lot of question marks to the forefront. The other thing is, you know, keep in mind, this is a team that has failed to score 20 points in the last 7 games, Paul. That includes the playoff game, and that goes back to the Steelers game late last season.
I heard somebody make that statement, and I immediately shook my head and winced because there's no relevance. I don't like when people put streaks together over the course of 2 seasons. I think it's wrong. There's an entire off season that has occurred. There have been personnel changes that has occurred. No, it's wrong. That's like in baseball when I forget who it was working on a hitting streak and they wanted to know, well, is he going to beat Pete Rose's streak if the streak continues through the off season into next year? The answer is no. Streaks are not streaks, really, when there's an off-season cut in the middle of it. So I don't want to hear about that. Go somewhere else.
Well, listen, I disagree with you in terms of individual streaks. I think are different than team streaks because the individual has much more influence over his accomplishments than a team does. So your point about the team and the personnel changing, I buy that, Paul. But if an individual is on a hitting streak, he certainly has the ability to carry that over into the following season. Well, once again, we go back and forth.
And I don't know if the NFL does or not. I don't know officially what they do with their stats. But circumstances are so different because of an off season that I have a problem with it. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, whether or not you agree or disagree with that, it is fair, though, to point out that the offensive line that ended last season is the offensive line that started in 2017. I don't think that's a stretch, Paul.
No.
The personnel in terms of the backfield is a little different. Guys are in different roles, but you have similar running backs. Eli Manning is still running this offense. There are still a number of similarities on offense to say, while some new talent has been infused, that the scheme is not overall different and the guys that are expected to do the heavy lifting are not overall different.
No, that's true. And we do talk about there is some carryover from the previous season, and certainly continuity is a factor we've all discussed numerous times. So I'm not disputing that there can be trends, there can be similarities, there can be things you base your judgments on. I just don't like the streak argument. The streak argument to me just takes it to a different level, and it enhances or makes whatever the reality is much more than it needs to be in the argument. That's all.
Well, we're going to have to see a few more games until we really get to the point that this is truly continuing and carrying over to 2017. But I think it is fair to say that the issues we talked about last season reared their ugly head again in this week one opener.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They didn't run the ball well, and they didn't give Eli Manning much time. That's a fact.
Now, we also can't be naive. Odell Beckham wasn't on the field. Now, there's multiple ways that you could look at this. One argument would be, well, even though Odell Beckham wasn't on the field, look at the talent that the Giants have around him. You should still be able to do more than just settle for 3 points. The right. other argument is, well, doesn't Dallas's defensive strategy change and alter when Beckham's not on the field? Because maybe they were going to double him, Paul, and now you can have an extra defender that goes towards some other weapons such as tight ends and wide receivers.
You know, I don't want to use the Beckham thing as an excuse.
No, and you shouldn't. I'm just bringing it up as a question and part of the dialogue. I'm not saying it should be brought to an excuse.
There's no question that Odell Beckham Jr.'s presence affects game plans, affects adjustments, and affects how teams will play you. There's no doubt about that. We'd be dumb not to think that. But the way the running game wasn't working last night, and the way that the pass rush was getting after Eli from the front seven, by the way, it wasn't like secondary guys were coming. And
no, it was strictly. Okay. And sometimes they were only rushing three guys, by the way.
Yeah. That's to me, that's telling me that Odell Beckham Jr. probably was not going to make much difference in this game, even as a decoy. And by the way, if you'll allow me to just mention a couple of positives, big positive to the Giants organization for being upfront about this whole thing with Beckham. They said all along that it was going to be a medical decision. And what happened? Exactly as I told you, folks, I think it was even right after the Browns game. I think the next day we did a show. And I said, well, folks, this is what's going to happen. He's probably going to wind up being a game-time decision for the Dallas game, probably. And it will be on the medical staff, which then Coach McAdoo confirmed the following week and said it will be on the medical staff. And if they feel that there's too much risk involved, then they will shut him down. If they do not, he will play, and they will test him out before the game. I've repeated this like a parrot for several weeks now, and what happened? Yesterday, strength and conditioning coach, receivers coach, head coach, GM, medical staff, Odell Beckham Jr. went out there with the intention of, I want to play, I'm going to do the test that you want me to do, and I'm going to show you that I can do it, and you're going to clear me. So Beckham goes out there. And he spends 20 of his 31 minutes out on the field yesterday going through routes against air and trying to show the Giants hierarchy that he's going to be able to do it. And you heard me talk to you from the booth on the pregame show. He did not look himself. And clearly, with their eyes, the medical staff said, this is a guy, and I'm sure that also, they were talking to him. You could see that they were talking to him. Every couple of minutes, they were talking to him.
Well, McAdoo was also talking to him, too.
They all were.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, the players got to be honest. They tell him, you got to be honest with us. We need to make a legitimate judgment here. So you need to tell us, when you're doing this, how does that feel? Is there a tweak? Is there a sharp pain? Is there something? You have to tell us. And so Beckham would go do some stuff, talk to them. Go do some stuff. Talk to them. Clearly, the evidence that they had with their eyes and with the input that he was giving them from his own body said to the medical staff, this is not a good idea. He must be shut down. And that's exactly how it went down. And so it was razor thin. It came down to, what, two hours before kickoff. And then, of course, the inactives came out 90 minutes before kickoff. But that was not unexpected. We've been warning you about this for weeks. We've told you exactly how it was going to play out. The only thing I thought was, last week, the way Beckham was able to do a number of things as he was trying to get closer and closer to that test, arrow was pointing up.
That
it
was
good
building
for
up,
him.
Correct. In terms of him running vertically throughout practice on
Absolutely.
The side, jogging.
The bike, yeah. All the stuff he was doing. Again, though, we told you this from the beginning. He was going to have to test it with real routes
Cutting
prior to the game.
Yeah.
And they were going to hold off on that test until game day to maximize his rehab. They played this as smartly as they possibly could to maximize his potential to make it. And we told you from the beginning, barring a setback, he's got a real good chance to make it. But guess what? Couldn't pass the test on game day. That's a setback. He doesn't make it. Case closed. So thumbs up to the Giants for being direct, for handling this thing, for not buckling to any type of second guessing that, you know, we want to force him out there. No, they did not do it. Okay, that aside. The other thing I want to say, big ups, B.J. Goodson passed the test.
Oh, yeah.
18 tackles, 14 solos on a defense that, again, held the Cowboys to four field goals and a touchdown, 19 points. Giants gave up 17 points a game last year. They gave up 19 points last night. That should be enough to win most games.
Yeah.
I do understand the Giants gave up a lot of third down conversions. 8 out of 15, was it?
Yes, 8 out of 15.
All right, not good. Most of them were third and short. Okay, not good. I understand that totally. They didn't get turnovers. I understand that totally. I give the defense a B. They played well.
I think that's very fair. I think you have to take into consideration that with the amount of time that the Cowboys had the football, they had the ball for nearly 35 minutes, nearly 10 more minutes than the Giants. So that played right into the hands of the Cowboys, wear down a defense, tire them out, and Dallas was successful in doing that. And then you take into consideration that, you know, they were knocking on the door in the red zone a number of times, and the Giants were able to hold them to field goals, as you alluded to walk away with saying they only had 19 points. I think the defense did everything it could to keep the Giants in this game and still position themselves to try to rally and win it. When you give up less than 20 points in the NFL, Paul, I think that's extremely respectable. And you're at least giving your team a chance to go out on top. Unfortunately, the offense did not meet them halfway.
Well, let's go right to the biggest point, in my opinion, of the game. Third quarter, Giants open up with the kickoff. 10-minute drive all the way down the field.
Yep.
And they stall inside the 10-yard line and settle for a field goal. To me, that was the killer. I talked about it on the MSG postgame with Shane Vereen last night. That was the punch to the stomach right there, because they score a touchdown there. This seems to be like it could be more of a game.
Maybe momentum changes a bit here or there. Remember, they still need another two scores, but I understand your point that
there's 5 minutes
change
left
the
in
outlook.
The third quarter. Yep. You need two scores, and maybe you've said to Dallas, okay, guess what? We took an 8 count, but we're still standing. But by settling for that field goal, that hurt.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. They accumulated more yardage and held the ball longer than they had in the entire first half on that drive alone.
Yes.
So I think that says a lot.
And I believe, let me look at my notes here a second. Sorry, folks, I didn't have them out. I believe I wrote down, because I chart plays during the games, you guys know that.
No, I think that's been well documented, unless anybody's been living under a rock for too long.
Eli, on that drive, was 9 of 9. All short stuff.
But, hey, it was moving the chains.
But 9 of 9.
But then, to counter that, though, Paul, despite how effective they were, let's go down to the red zone. So it's first and goal at the Dallas 5. So you're knocking on the door. Perkins runs up the middle, only gains a yard. Second and goal at the 4. Hey, still manageable.
No push.
What happens?
No push.
No push, and then Manning takes a sack. And they lose 9 yards. So they go from second and goal at the 4
Be careful.
To third
don't,
and goal at the 13.
Don't say he took a sack.
So, well,
he
meaning
was sacked.
He was sacked. Okay.
That was not holding the ball too
correct.
Long.
No, he it wasn't. Through. But he literally.
He had no time.
And he went down immediately, though. I guess that's why
no choice.
That's why I referred to it as taking a sack. Okay. Because there were 3 or 4 guys, if you go back and look at the replay, that
swarmed
there
were 3.
Him. I think there's immediately Manning was like, listen, I got no choice. I got to go down.
That can't happen.
Correct. So now it's third and goal. From the 13, he does complete a pass, but Roger Lewis is well short of, obviously, the end zone on that, and they have to settle for a field goal.
Yeah.
And that was the most promising drive of the game.
And that, to me, right there, is where you pretty much knew that this was going to be a big problem. You know, up until that point, to be honest, if I'm Dallas, I'm pretty frustrated because I've totally dominated and controlled this game throughout the first half.
But the score didn't necessarily reflect
and
that.
And the score says the Giants are on a respirator. They're still alive.
Well,
and they come right out and go, whew, right down the field. I'm thinking, if I'm the Cowboys and I give up a touchdown here, it's got to put a lot of doubt in my head.
but a little too close for comfort under those circumstances. But you know what it reminded me of? And I understand that the Giants' offense struggled immensely, but it still reminded me, Paul, of last year's Week 1 opener. Dallas dominated in the first half, if you go back. They put together one lengthy drive after another. They then settled for field goals. And what happened? Eli hit Sterling Shepard for that touchdown right at the end of the half, and you're looking at the score, and you're like, Dallas has dominated time of possession, yet it's the Giants that are now in control of this game.
Well, it's funny you mention about how one possession can change things. It wasn't just this drive we're talking about. If you really want to even give you a foreshadowing of what was to come, the Giants had the ball with 2 minutes left in the first half. And they give it up right away. And Dallas tacks on a field goal going into the locker room. I mean, talk about, you know, what's the word that Coach McAdoo likes to use? Symmetry, continuity. What's that word he likes to use when he talks about how all three phases of the game build off of each other and they all play in unison and they're all doing well?
Yeah, I know. I mean,
he has a word for it. I'm forgetting what it is.
Yeah.
But it was broken there. It really was, because the offense has a chance in a two-minute drill now to get points on the board. And to they always tell you, all you high school football coaches know this, the last possession of the first half and the first possession of the second half are two of the most critical possessions in the game. Yeah, everyone wants to score first right out of the gate. Yeah, everybody needs that late fourth quarter touchdown on occasion to win a game. So I get that. But every game, last possession of the half, first possession of the third quarter, every game, those are going to help tilt the scales. And what happened? The Giants butcher their last offensive possession of the first half. Dallas goes and steals a field goal. Steals a field goal.
In a minute 14, they went 7 plays, 51 yards.
And then the Giants start the third quarter and settle for 3. You want to microcosm the entire 3 hours? Just right down into this little ball of wax, that's the game.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point in terms of not being able to also change field position as a result of the constant three and outs. Let's not forget about that. I wrote this down. The first 4 possessions that the Giants had, Paul, they started their own 6, their own 25, their own 11, their own 7. Then if you look at where Dallas started, I mean, Dallas started one drive deep in its own territory at like the 45-yard line. That changes things tremendously, and that helps all of a sudden Dallas get into field goal range a lot quicker.
And should we mention, by the way, the lone Dallas touchdown to Witten came after a horrific, and again,
Jenkins pass it to
league. You know, I'm not coaching. I'm not playing. I'm strictly, this is my opinion. My opinion. A horrific call on Janoris Jenkins against Dez Bryant for pass interference, which set up that touchdown inside the 5-yard line. Horrible, horrible call. Ball was out of bounds. Bryant was on the boundary. Ball was a bit underthrown. If anything, Jenkins might have had a better chance to catch that ball than Bryant. Horrible call, and that led to the touchdown that the defense gave up. You can't really kill the defense. You can be a little squirmish about a couple things they did, but solid B for the defense.
I think that's a fair assessment. And like we said, you hold the team to 19 points, one of the best offenses in the NFL. You're at least giving your team a chance to win. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Twitter as well, hashtag Giants Chat. Now, before we open up the phone lines, I just want to say one thing really quick. You know, let's not overlook today's date. And I think we should take a moment here to acknowledge the fact that this is the 16th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. And it's an extremely meaningful day for those of us in this area and for those that lost loved ones. So before we get animated in the X's and O's of football and overly passionate about what transpired yesterday, just take a moment today, try to put things in perspective, that there are things that are bigger and larger than football.
I would add there's a video up on Giants.com. And if you're on Twitter right now, probably because you're watching the show, I've just retweeted it. The Giants have put it out, and it's a reflective piece about memories of 9/11. And Jonathan Casillas, of course, is a Jersey City native. So for him, 9/11 is a particularly significant thing, because unlike many other players who may come from other parts of the country and have played here, Jonathan Casillas, that hits in his backyard.
Absolutely, a lot of players. And remember, you know, to go back to 2001, it was that Giants-Broncos game, Paul, in Denver the night before. And the Giants then practiced and watched what was occurring from across the river. So, I mean, it was tied in to everybody in this community, but specifically to the Giants as well. So we just wanted to take a moment to make sure that you do acknowledge the significance of September 11th. Okay, let's open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. We've got Dave on the line in Cranford. Dave, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
Lance and Paul, great to talk to you. And I just want to re-echo what you just said about 9/11. I also think about Coughlin that day, which was very key to a lot of us who live in the area, about calling his own kids and seeing where they were, and which is what we all did. And so I agree with you, and I think that's a great perspective before we begin all those calls.
Well, appreciate that. So what do you have for us, Dave?
So I want to go, you know, Paul, I wanted to ask you specifically, and I guess my main question is, I just the word you were reaching for before was complimentary.
Yes.
That's what McAdoo has talked about.
That's it.
And you know, it was, you know, the defense or it's the offense. And I'm a little bit concerned, Paul, first time, you know, and I'm like you and very bullish on this team and where they've built stuff. Very disappointed because I just thought that in the first half they came out and they looked overmatched from a coaching perspective. It looked like Dallas made a lot of adjustments in that. The Giants didn't. We made adjustments in the second half, which was good to see, but I think a little bit too late. And my question to you guys is this, that I'd like you to get comment on, and that is the difference between McAdoo as a head coach and an offensive coordinator. And I think there's a difference there that as an offensive coordinator, I think he's solely focused on the offense, solely focused on production and less focused on this whole notion of complementary. And I think that little difference, I'm concerned going forward that that's a negative for us because, you know, he doesn't have that killer instinct. You want to be complementary to your defense, go out and score a bunch of points and be aggressive. That would be my first question to you.
My only answer, and I know you're going to tell me it's a cop-out, but they won 11 games and went to the playoffs last year in his rookie season as a head coach. And there are many reasons why. You could talk about the investment in the defense. You could talk about how well they gelled and played defensively. You could talk about, you know, Eli's game-winning drives. He had 6 of them, I believe it was, last year. There are a lot of reasons it happened. But because of that, Coach McAdoo's only track record as a head coach is 11-5 in season number one. Therefore, before you start to revamp or start to significantly change anything that he's going to do as a head coach, including giving up the play calling, there's going to have to be another significant chunk, perhaps a whole season of a body of evidence that they will then reevaluate, weigh the scales, and say, okay, 11-5 playoffs, first round one season, next season, whatever it turns out to be, let's say it's 5-11. Well, now you have some significant evidence on the other side of the scale, and you're going to have to balance it out and figure out what to do. But right now, after week one of year number two of his head coaching tenure, there is no way anybody is even going to approach the scale and try to figure out where that balance lies. There's not enough.
Okay. Paul, I'm sure you've looked at this play maybe more than I have, but I'd love to get your thoughts on the simple stunt that the Cowboys ran. I think it was either first or second series of the game.
I know.
Yeah, it was the first series. Yeah,
I know.
When DeMarcus Lawrence came in for the sack.
Who was at fault, Paul? Whose play is that? I look at it and say, it looks like it's John Jerry. Looks like he pushes his guy off and should come back and recognize that the other guy's coming around. Is that accurate? And if it is, my question to you is, you know, what's the leash with this guy? Because I understand his physical prowess. And the crazy part is he's had a great reputation as a pass blocker.
Correct.
But for the preseason and going into the first game, that seems to have died down. And part of me asks, You know, when is, you know, are they considering Brett Jones for that spot?
I'm going to give you a respectful and intelligent answer, and I'm going to go in reverse order. There is no question that over the 3 years plus here, John Jerry has been a sufficient and adequate pass protector. In this preseason, he has had trouble. There is no doubt. Coach had addressed this before the Patriots game, that some of his rough edges, so to speak, may have been because he was tired or his conditioning wasn't where they wanted it to be. And so, of course, he did not play that fourth preseason game. Coach was expressing concern at that time, and had, of course, given Fluker and Jones first-team reps in the previous week and a half.
Yeah,
it was clear to me that John Jerry, because of his rep and his track record, he was still going to start against Dallas. I never doubted that for a second. But now that he's put that game on tape, you have to believe that since there's already a yellow warning sign for him, that Coach McAdoo is going to revisit that once again, whether or not he makes the move or gives him another week. That's something that only the coach is going to have to decide probably Wednesday morning. I don't even think he's made that decision today. They will have to continue to look at the film and figure out what they want to do. But that's the reason. Yes, he is on yellow alert. And yes, his track record has given him somewhat of a leash. The answer to your first question, I will never sit here on camera, okay, and point a finger and say 100% that player is the guy who made the mistake, because, again, I don't know the call, and I don't think it's my position, it's the coach's position, to grade the players and say, that's your fault, you screwed that up. That's not my job. My job is to try to analyze, try to explain, and try to give you an educated guess about something that I might know that I can pass along to the fans who may not know. So I don't think you saw it wrong. I think from looking at it, it would appear that there was either mental confusion on what to do with that stunt or simply a physical inability to handle it. Either way, it's not good. And most times, Henry Hanoski's in the room, by the way. Henry, help me out on this. Most times when a stunt gets barely, badly blown by the offensive line, most times both guys involved in the offensive protection had something to do with it.
Yeah, it's all about the exchange, the meshing.
All right, Henry is saying it's about the exchange and the meshing of both players. It's rarely just one guy who totally blows it. Both guys have to somewhat share in that responsibility. Yeah,
well, because of the communication. You know, it comes down to the communication between both of the players to be able to adjust on now the switch that the defense is presenting.
All right, so I'm getting that from the rhinoceros himself, the fullback sitting in the room off here to the side. So I'm not trying to smoke you. I'm giving you the most honest, legit answer I can.
And Dave, listen, appreciate the phone call. I will say this. During the preseason, the whole point of giving Brett Jones and Fluker those reps is to also evaluate that in the event they do want to make a change, they at least have something documented on film in addition to what they see in practice.
Correct.
To determine that they're confident in making a move like that. One other thing I wanted to piggyback off of before we get back to the phone lines, and that was partially part of Dave's question about, does the philosophy change in terms of the aggressiveness or the lack thereof of the offense because of what the defense has proven to do time and time again going back to last season? I do think, and this is just me and my personal opinion, that Ben McAdoo is operating under the mindset that my defense is not broken. My defense is one of the strongest facets of this team.
And he should feel that way.
Correct. So therefore, it's not to say that they don't want to score points and they don't want to be aggressive, but I think that you have to at least weigh, if we figure our defense can make stops and keep ourselves in games, are we going to try to press the envelope consistently and put the offense in a risky position? I think that at least is part of the dialogue, part of the thinking.
Yeah. It has to be a factor. Because if you're going to play, again, coach's term, not his necessarily, but if you're going to play smart percentage football, you have to go into a game diagramming a game plan that says, we can pretty much count on this, so this is the other thing we have to do to put us in the best position to win.
And to overlook that, you know, would be ridiculous. You have to at least consider that based on what we've seen out of the defense last season, as well as what the defense performed in terms of yesterday's game, keeping themselves in the contest. All right, let's head back to the lines. Mike is in Pennsylvania. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing all right, Mike. What do you got for us?
Well, I just wanted to pinpoint, honestly, as a Giants fan, I feel kind of wronged by the officiating yesterday. And I know we can talk about the pass interference calls. That was blatantly obvious. But if you look at the first half series, it seems like every single snap, Snacks was in a headlock. OV, JPP, Tyrion Smith was just going to town on them holding. But they always got overlooked. And I'm not saying that the Giants weren't holding when Flowers got a flag for one. But it just seems like it's the same story, different year. And I just want to get your take on that.
I will only say this, and I want to say this because I did see it. It was right in front of me down in the red zone. There was a play in the red zone where the Cowboys actually wound up settling for a field goal. But right in front of me, Tyron Smith is like this for about 7 seconds on Olivier Vernon.
Yeah.
Fully extended arm with a full fist full of shoulder pad jersey.
Right.
Okay? And it was like every single... I'm sorry, you all right?
Nice. I'm okay. Okay. Thank you. I prepare mentally and physically for
it. I think even the satellites that are up there in outer space by the Milky Way could see that hole and
right.
Nothing. All right. That's not the point. The point you're making is that there's a lot of stuff that's happening, and I'm sure that there were many that probably didn't get called the other way, too.
And it happens every single game, though.
It's just a shame that we can't improve the level across the board of some things that are just so blatantly obvious and whatever. Hey, you know what, though? Well, I've never worn the pinstripes. I've never been an official in a football game, never mind an NFL game. So I know those guys have a very hard job to do.
Extremely difficult
and
job.
And some of them are such great guys, and they try so hard. But it is frustrating as a fan, no matter what team you're rooting for, when you see stuff like that. And then, of course, when you see the Jackrabbit interference call, and it's like, really?
But then right. Again, I mean, you still need to go back to the fact that the Giants only scored 3 points. You know,
yeah,
so that's
please
why
don't use that
I
as an excuse for the game.
And that's why
don't
I think
that.
You have to put things in perspective and say, yes, it may have been a bad call, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. But then again, Dallas is still at the 13-yard line. The Giants have an opportunity to still keep Dallas out of the end zone. And there were breakdowns on that Jason Witten pass that enabled Dallas to capitalize. And when you only score 3 points, to say that the game came down to a bad pass interference call, I think is misleading.
No, please. Well, yeah, don't. This is a totally different point. This isn't about who won or lost the game. This is just about, in general, you'd like to see better officiating.
But I will add this, and Mike, we'll let you continue. From offensive linemen that I talk to that both are in the NFL and have played the game, the constant argument they say, Paul, is what? You could call holding on every single snap in the National Football League in the history of the game.
Correct.
So that, to me, is the human element of football. And while I understand from a fan's perspective, it's always convenient to throw out the officials and say, oh, you know, they tried to screw this team. Every team can make that argument, and good teams overcome those issues.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I guess the point that I'm trying to make right now is Dallas dominated time of possession in the first half. And it's tough to get more than 3 points on the board when every single big play that Dallas had, it seemed like every first down, the 17-yard run with 30 seconds left in the first half, there was a huge holding call that they missed on Tyrion Smith, or I'm sorry, Lyle Collins on JPP. Zeke had I think it was a 30-yard run, same thing on OV. Like it's tough to get your offense in a groove when you can't get the ball back.
Well, but then again, I mean, listen, I get your point about they did dominate time of possession, but I don't think we should lose sight on the fact that the Giants' first four possessions of the first half, three plays and out, five plays in a punt, four plays in a punt. So, I mean, it does go back on the team's offense to say we need to take advantage of our opportunities when we have the ball and put together lengthy drives to not put our defense in that position or to be put in a position where maybe the officiating does play a role. So, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it.
I definitely agree with that. I was actually shocked that Fluker wasn't active yesterday. I thought that was – well, I would have wanted him in after – John Jerry's first couple series.
That did seem to be surprising to most observers.
And Ben McAdoo is going to have a conference call later today, and perhaps that will be discussed, because I think another interesting point about the inactives was the fact that with Odell Beckham inactive, you would thought maybe Tavarius King would have dressed, considering he practiced over the course of the week, and he also was inactive. So they dressed only four wide receivers, and Dwayne Harris is one of those four who is mainly a special teams player.
Right.
So that was also a little bit surprising. But until Ben McAdoo perhaps is asked about that, and he was not. Nobody asked him. I remember because I listened to the whole press conference. There were a number of other things. But usually the day after is when he tends to discuss after looking at the film and maybe updating injuries. So perhaps we'll get an answer to that. And Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadows. We continue to take your phone calls reacting to the Giants' loss to the Cowboys 19-3. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
All right, Bash. What do you got for us?
I agree with everything y'all said at the beginning of the show as far as the preseason thing, as far as preseason training camp, as far as injuries week one.
Bash, let me stop you right there. Are you on speakerphone, just out of curiosity, because you're coming in very faint?
If
there's any way you could get off speaker just so we could hear you a bit clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, one second.
Okay.
All right, Bash. Well, in the meantime, while you work that out, we'll at least continue to discuss the game. But in terms of
much better.
That's a little bit better.
Okay. Yeah, I was going as far as the training camp and preseason. Y'all said as far as week one, I agree with week one injuries. But I wanted to get into everything y'all said. I'm going to show us. I agree with. I just wanted to get into one thing y'all didn't discuss. Two things y'all didn't discuss as far as the play. The breakup as far as the Witten touchdown, as far as Eli Apple, what that play, what happened there, and probably get that. As far as Brandon Marshall not being targeted, as far as was that a question about that, as far as only being targeted four times and having one catch, was it like Eli wasn't targeting him at all, wasn't looking his way? Was that more on Eli calling the plays or Ben McAdoo not game plan, or is that more on Eli or Ben McAdoo as far as not targeting Brandon Marshall in this game as far as Odell being out?
Well, if you want to take in terms of the game plan, I was going to go over in terms of the targeting Brandon Marshall. Right. Well, one thing I was going to point out is I think part of it was also the pressure that Eli Manning saw throughout the course of the game, and he was looking Brandon Marshall's way. I know there was a play in the end zone where Marshall was really tied up with the opposing corner, and Eli looked at him and then hesitated because he was worried that Brandon Marshall wasn't in a prime position. But let's go to a play where Marshall was wide open. Eli Manning steps up in the pocket. He eludes the pressure. Marshall, if you recall this play, Paul, is in the left flat. Nobody is in front of Brandon Marshall. If he makes that catch, he can gain at least 20 to 25 yards, I think, in the blink of an eye. Pass was off the mark, and I think that goes back to the point that, you know, we've talked about sometimes when Eli sees pressure throughout the course of a game, even when the pressure's not there, Paul, I don't want to say that it's constantly happy feet, but sometimes quarterbacks anticipate things even when it's not there because of so much pressure that they have to deal with throughout the course of the game. And that was one of those plays where Eli, I think, had time and may have rushed it a bit, and that's why he wasn't able to hook up with Brandon Marshall.
I think, you know, it's fair to ask that question. You know, I don't know anything other than Coach McAdoo said after the game that in the flow of the game, that's just the way it worked out. I don't think, by the way, I don't think, by the way, Coach, in his own mind, I don't think Coach ever says going into a game, we have to give so many targets to this player. I don't think that, but I do think that they do say, hey, you know what, we'd like to feature this guy because we think this is going to work well with our scheme and what we're planning to do. That, I'm sure, happens. So if you want to say, why wasn't maybe Marshall going into the game going to be the primary weapon on the offensive game plan, you might be able to ask that question. But, you know, we're not in the coach's office during game plan night, so we're not going to be able to tell you
we're
that.
Not, but I think it is fair to say that I think it's highly unlikely that every team goes into a game and says, our number one wideout, for example, the Steelers, you know, do they say to themselves, we have to get Antonio Brown 15 to 20 targets every single game? I think a lot of that is game flow.
Now, in looking at the Witten touchdown, it appears from the naked eye, and I haven't looked at the coach's tape yet, the overall 22, you know, the overhead bird's eye view, but it appears from the naked eye when I was there, and I've just watched the TV replay again, it certainly looks like Eli Apple is perplexed and confused on the play. He's slow to react, does not close quick enough, kind of allows the Witten to get free, and then you see him with his body language being very frustrated after the play. So it would seem that that was an ME on his part. Again, it would seem that based on the visual evidence that we have. And that's as far as I'm going to go on that.
All right, Bash.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, let's head back to the lines. Charles is in New Mexico. Charles, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Doing all right, Charles. What do you got for us?
Hey, well, we're dying here in New Mexico, losing to those guys. And, you know, Paul, you were at the game, and Lance, your input. It seemed to me, of course, the refs always come into play in Dallas. It's not – but after waiting all the offseason, and I know Beckham didn't play, but the offense looked horrible. John Jerry was playing lookout football. They hiked the ball, and he turned around to Eli and said, look out most of the time. I think Flowers played a lot better, but – there was no intensity on that offense, and our defense did a great job to keep them out of the end zone, and you're right, it was a bogus pass interference call. But what are we going to do to change it? We need some help on that offensive line, and you just mentioned it. Fluker was inactive. Why was that?
Well, Coach McAdoo may give this that answer later today, but I guarantee you this, he's got to reevaluate that right now. You know, again, whether or not the leash is still long enough for Jerry to play against Detroit, we can't answer that today. But you know that leash has got to be short.
Yeah, and then as far as Odell goes, I mean, I don't know. You guys are closer to it. I don't think we see him till week four. He doesn't respond well to treatments, just like when he was a rookie. I mean, he could be missing 4 or 6 games. I know it's a high ankle sprain, and you just mentioned it. Antonio Brown, 11 of 11 yesterday with Roethlisberger. So, I mean, they do something in Pittsburgh that's a little bit different. And, you know, when McAdoo was under Coughlin, that offense clicked. As soon as he's calling the plays and he's the head coach, the offense ain't clicking. And, you know, they had that problem in Dallas with Garrett. And as soon as he got an offensive coordinator.
Well, they brought in Scott Linehan. And Charles, I don't think that your point should be overlooked. I think that's a fair point. It's important to look at what goes on across the league. The other example I would bring up, Charles, related to that, Dallas is a good one. Mike McCarthy, who is Ben McAdoo's mentor, he gave up play calling duties in Green Bay for an entire season. When he was also reevaluating. But, you know, I think what Paul touched on earlier, you have one season where Ben McAdoo's been doing dual things and they won 11 games. And now we have one game into his second season. So I'm also one that says let's see sample size before we rush to judgment. And I also think it's highly unlikely that after one game, even a coaching staff should have knee-jerk reactions that they need to now disown anything that they had philosophy-wise heading into the season. Well, but with all of that being said, I think it's a fair point. And that has been well documented, too.
I think there are half the teams across the league right now who are 0-1 and probably having these kinds of conversations.
And you know what? And I'm sure you've seen the graphics. I've seen the graphics put up on a lot of sports programs. They show you when a team loses the first game of the season, how they've come back and they've won the division. And that's all great to listen to. But, you know, you shouldn't overlook some of the issues that came about in game number one. But remember, Green Bay Packers last season. Everybody was questioning Aaron Rodgers and what happened. The offense was struggling, and then they turned it on in the second half of the season. I'm not bringing that up to say that all of a sudden things are magically going to change, but I bring it up just to say it's one game. Let's see more of a sample size before we start calling for coaching philosophy changes, play calling changes, and then some.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Charles. Thanks.
The Patriots gave up an NFL high for week one, 42 points. The other night and losing at home to the Chiefs. So is it time to say the Patriots are going to have the worst defense in the league this year and they won't make the playoffs?
Exactly. Well, or is it time that Matt Patricia shouldn't be the defensive coordinator anymore for the Patriots after he's had a good track record? You have bad games, and I understand Giants fans are going to argue, Paul, well, you know, I'm not worried about what's going on with the rest of the league. And I get that. You're focused on the Giants. But the point of bringing up other teams is to show that the Giants are not just in this bubble where they live in their own world.
Right.
That other teams are dealing with similar issues, and some overcome them, and some have ups and downs throughout the course of the season. But after one game, you still need to realize that it's a small sample size to start calling for drastic changes. And I'm talking about drastic changes not so much on a personnel standpoint. I'm talking about drastic changes from a coaching philosophy standpoint. That, I think, is a real knee-jerk reaction after just one game. Let's head back to the lines. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hi, guys. The game was definitely lost in the first half, and you said the time of possession, but what was the time of possession that Dallas had the ball in the first half? That killed us, really and truly. And we were lucky, you know what I mean, on that after the 2 minutes when we had the ball and gave it back, then we didn't give up a touchdown because they were burned out. You know, the blame's got to go on the offense.
Well, and, Joe,
Dallas had the ball for just over 20 minutes in the first half.
Well, are you sure that – yeah, exactly. 20 minutes and 33 seconds, 9:27 for the Giants.
Right. I said so, it's just
– says a lot.
And like I said, this was the first time the main thing is we – did we get anybody hurt?
No. Fortunately, that's another positive we should say. Really that, weren't
– Well, I don't want to go there yet, Coach.
He hasn't – but at least throughout the course of the game –
The
Giants did not announce any formal injuries.
Correct.
So
but you never know the next
correct.
Day
you never
what
know,
pops up.
But I think that that's at least something positive. You certainly never want to see anybody go down in week one. But we have to see what Ben McAdoo says after he gets to his conference call later today.
Right. And without our first team defense not playing that much, you know, and then they're going no huddle, Dallas, you know what I mean? You really got to give credit to our defense. And it just, you know, I don't want to come on Eli either, but if you switch the quarterbacks around in that game, do you think Eli would have won behind Dallas's line yesterday?
Well, you're talking about giving Eli Zeke Elliott and that offensive line? I mean, Joe, do we have to answer that question?
What I'm trying to say is that Dak Prescott, in all them drives, he made time there to make that to make a pass off or something like that. You know, you got to give him credit too. Really,
it wasn't sure,
just
of course,
the running.
Yeah.
You know, he was a big key in that play.
He managed the game effectively. Now he had some throws he'd like to have back, but I think he managed the game effectively.
Right, he did. He was lucky that, you know, there was a few, especially in that first half, that we could have intercepted. It just didn't go that way, you know. But
Collins nearly had one in the second half.
Correct.
Yeah,
well, and then
Cole Beasley made an
acrobatic grab. You know, that could have been an incompletion or an interception. Sometimes the ball does bounce your way.
I'm a diehard, too, and I didn't sleep at all last night. It's just disgusting. But what I want to say is I'll give you a – some look at last year. We beat Dallas twice. We finished 11 and what was it? Five. But Dallas finished 13-3. So maybe things will turn yet. So it's one game, and hopefully we can get it together. So thanks for taking my call.
All right, Joe. Thanks for the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter as well as we're recapping the Giants-Cowboys game from Sunday night. Let's go to California. Marcus. Marcus, what's happening?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Doing all right. What's happening with you?
oh, man. I just can't believe all the weapons and all the team acquired through the offseason and all what we had. But just Odell, just to go out for one game, I would just think Brandon Marshall would be the vocal point of the offense, be the strong point of the offense. Ben McAdoo at least run the offense through him. Eli didn't even look his way. I'm not even bash Eli because we had the best right tackle in the game. Okay, we had the best right tackle in the game in the NFL, and look how the best right tackle in the NFL played in week one.
Wait, when you say, hold on, just for clarification purposes, when you say the best right tackle in the NFL,
Oh, yes. Bobby Hart is so-called. Isn't he the best right tackle in the league?
The best right tackle in the NFL?
There was an article the other day that quoted Bobby Hart as making that comment in terms of...
Wait, he himself said that?
Pumping up his own confidence.
Oh, well, listen, that's different than somebody else from a statistical standpoint claiming that he's the...
I think I was caught off guard with that. The caller's trying to be a bit funny.
Okay, all right. The sarcasm went over my head, and I'm usually a fan of sarcasm.
A lot goes over his head.
Well,
all
right, there we go.
5 feet
yes.
one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me ask this question. Do you think Bobby Hart is the best right tackle in the league?
Do I think that?
That he's it right now? No, I would not agree with that sentiment.
Okay, so what makes him think he's the best right tackle in the league?
Well, but let me ask you.
Every competitor should feel that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Marquise, if you're Dak Prescott, for example, okay, I'm going to use this as a parallel. He was asked in the offseason whether he thinks the Cowboys are going to win the division. He came out and he said he thinks the Cowboys are going to win the division. If you're Dak Prescott, what are you going to tell the media? I think my team's going to finish fourth in the division? So how can you ever blame a player? How can you ever blame a player for feeling that way?
He played like he wanted that, though. Bobby Hart didn't play as if he wanted to be so-called the best right tackle in the league. His quarterback was getting bombarded. He was letting guys come in destroying Eli. I can't believe it. I'm not even mad at Eli because he didn't even have time to look at Brandon Marshall. So for the callers out there that's mad about Brandon Marshall not getting targets, not getting the ball, Eli didn't have time because the O-line was getting destroyed.
I'll tell you what. I'm glad.
Defensive line, I didn't even know them guys. I was destroying my offensive line.
They took, again, we started the show. Yeah. Grade it how you will, it was not a good performance. And quite honestly, I'm glad you brought up Eli. Eli played pretty well last night. He really did.
Under the circumstances.
He completed a high percentage of his passes.
I mean, there was one point in the first half, Eli Manning, he was 8 of 12 for 33 yards. But here's the kicker. Of those 8 completions, one of them was for more than 10 yards. Everything was dinking and dunking.
Given the circumstances that he had to work under, there wasn't much else he could do.
Yeah.
I know one thing, Odell better get paid however much he wants because it looks like the offense can't run without him.
Well, but you know what? Back to your point, Marquise, and appreciate the phone call. If you're saying that you can't talk about Brandon Marshall and the lack of targets because of the offensive line, then if you put Odell Beckham out there and Eli still gets pressured, isn't it the same parallel?
Yeah.
What's the difference? You can't tell me that we put Odell Beckham on the field, things drastically change if it still goes back to the offensive line.
And quite honestly, just because Odell Beckham comes back into the lineup, if you're going to pin the entire offense on him, well, then that means he's got to get like 15 targets a game, and that's not healthy either.
Because the whole point of bringing in other talent was to spread the wealth
right. And
him drawing attention to himself to open things up for others. Chris is in Westwood. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Paul, how's it going?
Hi.
Doing all right, Chris. What do you got for us?
Well, I have to let out a big sigh of disappointment, you know, and I got to tell you, it's just watching last night's game, there's so many elements to pick from, and I try to be an optimist, and you look at the running game, I mean, 7 carries, 16 yards. You put a West Coast offense into
wait a second. You said you just want to be an optimist, so why don't you call us up and talk about B.J. Goodson if you want to be an optimist? Because that was a really nice performance by the young man. Hello?
I mean, really, we put a short game, short pass game into function, and short game doesn't work. We can't run the ball.
Okay, see, he wants to be a pessimist. I thought you wanted to be an optimist. I gave on a silver platter B.J. Goodson, and you want to talk negative again.
He prefaced his statement that he'd like to be an optimist.
I know. Go,
go,
ahead.
Go ahead, Chris.
I'm having fun with you. Trying to have fun.
You know, listen, the defense, hands down, we have a top-five defense. I'm not disputing that. I think the defense, B.J., he held his own. I think the mentorship of Antonio Pierce was fantastic for
him. There
you
go. There you go.
He's on the right path. Like I said, the offense, I got to tell you, the short passing game, that's kind of why we put the West Coast offense in, was because, you know, Eli didn't have enough time. He would let off the ball like faster than any other quarterback last year statistically, you know, 2-3 seconds. So, you know, that was going into – that was the plan going in. why we don't have Brandon Marshall getting the ball early and often, why we can't have Paul Perkins generate yards. I can't pin everything on the offensive line. I know a lot of callers want to do that, but.
Well, I want to say this about the running game. And, you know, you can't overlook the fact that they only ran the ball 12 times in yesterday's game. And that game, even though it seemed as if there was a huge disparity in the score, Paul, it was still in a position where you could pound the football.
Which is why settling for three in the start of the third quarter was so huge. They score a touchdown there. Maybe you can be a bit more patient with the run game. But at only 3 points on that drive, you can't.
Well, then all of a sudden things change. So they ran the ball 12 times for 35 yards, just 2.9 yards per carry. If you want to break this down further, of their 12 runs, two were for negative yards. One was a kneel down, so remove that one.
Right.
Actually, technically, they ran the ball 11 times, to be more exact, because Eli Manning took a knee. That's why sometimes these stats alone don't tell the whole story. So one negative run, one run for 10 yards or more, two runs for 5 yards or more. The results are not great, I get that, but I still say the sample size is so small from yesterday's game that I don't think they really had much of an opportunity to gain any rhythm on the ground. Because Paul Perkins didn't even have that many carries.
Yeah, like I said, 7 carries, 16 yards. I mean, I don't know if Darkwood got any carries.
Darkwood did. And Darkwood actually had the best run. Darkwood had the best run. He had a 12-yard run.
Yeah, it's so tough. I got to tell you, it's get the tight ends involved more if you can't get it out to the wideouts. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the best way to go into this Monday night game because I don't know if you guys saw the Detroit game. They played pretty well, you know, and then I'm trying to look on to week two, but I don't know if his offensive line is going to hold up.
Well, that's obviously a concern after one game, and appreciate the phone call, Chris. And you look at the Lions' defensive personnel compared to the Cowboys' personnel. It's going to provide a different challenge for this offensive line. We'll see what Ben McAdoo says, whether or not there's going to be some changes on the conference call, and whether or not Odell Beckham will be ready to suit up. I mean, a lot of that remains in the land of the unknown at this point. Let's head back to the Lions. David is in North Carolina. Dave, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hi. All right, Dave. What do you got for us?
I hate to pile on, kind of like the last caller, but I mean, I know it's a shock to the system to watch that game last night, but as it unfolded, to me, it's really depressing because I see a pattern. And the pattern is this. 2015, when this offense was in the top 10, that was a mirage. That was Odell Beckham that caused that jump in the offense. Anytime Odell Beckham's been out of the lineup, remember a couple years ago in Minnesota, what a disastrous offensive performance that was, and granted, Minnesota's a great defense. But let's think about that. Let's think about last year, even when Odell Beckham's in the offense and how much this team struggles to score points. And I just don't see how one guy putting Brett Jones in fixes things. This is a whole unit of just – horribleness when you talk about the offensive line. The one good thing I want to tip my hat to Jerry Reese for is not signing any of these guys to an extension. Let me break it down for the fans that don't understand what's going on. For the past year and starting 2017, a defense is coming out on the field and playing not just a cover two, but a soft cover two and saying, we dare you to run the ball up our throats because we know you can't do it. And we're going to take our middle linebacker and drop him back about 5 yards and let him just hang out here in the passing lane because, again, we know you can't run the ball on us in a soft cover two.
And you know what? They won't change until the Giants prove that they can command that respect. We've talked about that all offseason.
Well, and the other thing, Dave.
One defense. And Evan Engram was supposed to help break that. But the problem is the linebackers are playing so deep. They're taking away that soft spot in the zone in the middle of the field. I can't even wrap my head around how an NFL team can't beat one look. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's despicable. I mean, my son's Mighty Mike football game this weekend will be more enjoyable than that first half of football was last night.
Well, Dave, the only thing that I'll add to what you had to say is, I mean, don't overlook the fact that the Cowboys have one of the most versatile linebackers out there in Sean Lee, who can cover more territory than I've seen compared to any other linebacker in the NFL. Now, that's not to say that your point is not well taken about issues that need to improve, but you're not going up against Luke Kuechly and Sean Lee every single week, who to me are extremely unique in terms of the territory that they can cover. So even a guy like Sean Lee, you put him back in coverage, he's got enough speed and quickness that he can come back into the box and still aid and stop
he's
the
really
run.
He's really good.
Yes, the last time I checked. I think that's a fair sentiment.
He's very good. I mean, and Jalen Smith looked very good. But go back and watch the Packer playoff game for anybody that can, and it'll surprise you that early in that game they came out in man defense. And, boy, after they got burned, even though Odell and Sterling didn't come down with the ball, after they got burned a couple times in that man defense, they said, whoa, 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 let's back off and just go to what everybody else has been playing in the Giants all year. Let's play cover two. Dare them to run it or throw the dink and dunks all over the field. And you know what's eventually going to happen? Eli's going to miss one, or we're going to come up and tackle him. I mean, there was no third and longs last night. Everything was third and four, third and five, third and six. There wasn't – I mean, besides a few plays where there were some holding calls, most of the time these were convertible third downs, and yet they're all playing back at the sticks and coming up and tackling because respects this run game, because Weston Richburg can't push anybody a pile. John Jerry sure can't push a pile. The only guy on this line that's halfway NFL starter quality caliber is Justin Pugh, and I'll end it there.
All right, Dave.
Thank
appreciate
you, Dave.
The phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, that is going to wrap up things for us today. Appreciate all the phone calls. We'll try to get to some of your tweets off the air since we have filled up our bank in terms of the phone calls. But Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern moving forward.
And before we sign off, I just want to say I know you acknowledge the memory of 9/11. We also certainly want to acknowledge all the folks in Houston and down in Florida who have dealt with the horrible weather tragedies of the last week or so. Certainly Godspeed, and I hope you guys can get through it.
Well said. With that being said, appreciate everybody for tuning in for today's program. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. Have a good one.